everyone, welcome to North and South Podcasts. This is Tim speaking. This is going to be a well-being podcast in association with Hope Street. And I've got a good friend of mine, Kev Mack, the legend. I know people say, like, I call everyone legends who come on, but Kev is a genuine legend. So, Kev, you are a martial arts coach. How did you get into that?
Started really getting into martial arts when I was 18. I think I just finished playing footy. I got disillusioned with playing team sports, I think, because I was the goalkeeper. I think the team that I always played for were always terrible, so I always got the blame for everything. So we're getting beaten, you're the goalkeeper. We were getting smashed every week. I thought, I need to try another sport here, one where it's just me and I can concentrate on me. And if it goes wrong, it's my fault. I think it stems, again, from probably what most fellas my age got inspired from, was watching Kickboxer and Bloodsport when we were younger.
Yeah.
I think I was watching Bloodsport when I was like maybe 10, 11. Yeah. And then it stemmed just for wanting to be like Jean-Claude Van Damme.
It's funny because when I was really young, we used to watch, like, it's a different thing now, isn't it? Because people have got all these streaming channels and all that, but back then you had to get like a video from the video shop.
Or the video van, do you remember?
Or the video van, yeah. And I remember like Bloodsport and Kickboxer were big things, and like Van Damme did like a new movie every year, didn't he? Yeah. And I remember like watching Chyna O'Brien, me and my mates doing martial arts in the garden. But there's a bit of a difference between like watching films and going, oh, that looks exciting, and messing around with your mates to actually getting into it as a discipline. So did you actually start going to classes? And
yeah, I went to a club called Muggle Kickboxing Club, obviously in Muggle. But I think I was there for maybe a year or so, but I wanted to fight, and they didn't really push competition in that club. I think I entered a competition, I think, without like the coach, without telling the coach, because he didn't push it at all. So then that led me to finding some way to push competition. So I ended up joining the martial arts studio on Long Lane. But luckily they had like an affiliate club right by ours in Lydia. So that's where I ended up going. I think the only reason why I wanted to do martial arts or get into fighting, because it was terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, something that's really difficult. Even like before I knew about struggling, like doing difficult things, I thought, no one else is doing it that I know. Mm. And I'm the only one sort of my friendship group that's going to do it. So I thought, it's going to be me that does it.
Yeah. It's funny because I went to a few jiu-jitsu classes when I was in, I think, year 9 with a friend. We just went in the summer halls and then we stopped.
Mm.
But like, you do a few lessons and then it emerges, doesn't it, this idea like that, whoa, this is uncomfortable.
Mm.
This is hard. It's amazing, but there's a discipline side to it and a commitment side to it, which, like, you know, if you like, separates the wheat from the chaff. It's like, you know, there's a load of people who probably start playing guitar and then, you know, after a few weeks they stop. But there's a big discipline dimension to it, and I think, as you said, for a lot of people, that discipline, that self-discipline, it's a real important part of their self-development. Is that how you found it?
Yeah, and same with the resilience as well. I think even without knowing, I thought, this is really difficult, I have to stick with it. Because you want to just prove something to yourself more than,
yeah,
it wasn't really for others, it was for myself really. This is a difficult task, you need to do this. And just structure during the week as well, you know, something to do during the week after college or work. I couldn't just go home and sit and watch the telly.
Yeah.
I had like loads of energy, though, right, I can get out the house 3-4 times a week and do this now.
Yeah, that's good. And I think, as well as that, society's a lot more complex now, isn't it, in terms of, you know, like computers and phones and things vying for our attention. And to go to somewhere, like, I go to Hope Street every Tuesday, the wellbeing group I go to, and I go, that's part of my weekly routine on the Tuesday. I look forward to listen to people speaking, people like yourself, etc. And that discipline in the week of finding things that mean something to you, you know, it's a big well-being positive, isn't it, if you get it right and you find what you're into.
It's a big social thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
I found like I'm out socialising near every night.
Yeah.
And that's like a big buzz. Like, not many people get to do that. Some people may just have to have the weekend, whatever hobbies, or if they go like out or whatever, but I'm socialising every night now.
Yeah.
And I have a Saturday morning as well. So that's like a big boost as well, I think.
Just working with people, but also when you've got a commonality, a purpose,
yeah,
that makes it better. I mean, we did a stall in Ormskirk. All the areas we're talking about here are in North Liverpool, or just north of Liverpool, to anyone from further afield. But I went to Ormskirk, where Hope Street is based, the charity group I work with, and we did a stall on Sunday, and we had like live music on in Ormskirk.
Oh, it was the festival, wasn't it?
Yeah, the festival, yeah. So, speaking to loads of people, and you know, with lockdown, and my son's nearly three now, I thought, God, when was the last time I listened to live music? You know, yeah. it was great, but you do get that meaning from things, don't you? And the chance to meet people who you like, and you know, I think that's great. So, doing it as a student, if you like, is one thing. The coaching is another thing entirely, because I go to like yoga, Pilates and stuff, and I often look at the coach or the person running going, they're good. There's pressure to be good when you're a coach. So how did you make that transition?
I never wanted to coach jiu-jitsu or grappling or martial arts properly. I always wanted to just compete, train. Yeah. It was training was always just my thing that I did.
Yeah.
And then sort of when we were coming up to opening the gym, I was a little bit hesitant, because I said to Sophie, this is my partner, I just like having training as my thing that I do, as my way of just relaxing.
Yeah.
But then it was there that gave me the big push to really do it, because yeah. I've always coached. I've been coaching fitness and fitness classes and personal training since I was 18, and it was just like against. And I think I'd always wanted my own place. And when we were buying, or we were about to buy a house. But it fell through. It had a big sort of garage space that I was going to do one-to-ones in there. But that fell through. So the dream of having my own premises fell through. And then there it was when we sort of decided to open our own place. It was there. She went, you've always wanted to have your own place. Do it. So if it wasn't for her, I may not have done it.
Yeah.
Going to the gym.
Sometimes it just takes that little bit of positivity or someone else's perspective to change things. And we go through life, don't we? And I mean, I suppose when you're young, it's different. But now, when something happens now, or an opportunity comes up, or someone says something, I really listen to it now and think, to what extent am I closing my own mind off? You know, what's this person got to say? It just opens your eyes. Now, you've got your own place now, which we'll get to in a moment. But you teach two particular martial arts, and they are Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and grappling.
Yes.
Now, I've watched some videos of these, and I've heard people talk about BJJ as being the, you know, the ultimate sport and in terms of martial arts and defence. I know you say, well, it's one of them, because I think you're sticking up for grappling and other things, but what are those two disciplines like, and what are the differences between them?
So for those who aren't sure of what BJJ is, or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it looks like judo. So obviously I'm going to reference two Olympic sports, which is judo, which a lot of people are probably familiar with. You'll see two people wearing a kimono or a gi, so they'll have a jacket and pants on, and they're pushing and pulling each other. And a lot of people don't know what wrestling is, or freestyle wrestling, not pro wrestling like WWE. Yeah. So these are two sports. So we always start off on the feet. So in BJJ, you can use the jacket, you can use the pants, you can grab the pants, you can push and pull. So then once it gets taken to the floor, it continues, unlike judo, where, let's say, one guy throws the other and they'll score the ippon, the win. Like, judo stops at that point.
Yeah.
But then in jiu-jitsu, we continue until like there's either a points win or there's a tap out. Then in the grappling, we just call it grappling or submission grappling, it's two different sports again. So in the grappling classes or the wrestling classes that we do, we don't wear the jacket or the pants. We wear shorts, a t-shirt, or like call it tight fitting tops, like rash guards. So again, it's a different sport again. So you can't grab the clothing and that. So that looks probably similar to more freestyle wrestling that people will know, but again, it then continues on the floor.
Yeah.
So there's no gripping of pants or clothing in that. People think it's the same. A lot of clubs will call it just no-gi Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but it's two different sports. I think well, the way it's gone now, it's turned into a completely different sport on its own right now, without the jacket on.
Yeah. So when you go to the floor, you say points wins, a coach is watching and giving points, and after enough points have been accrued by one of the combatants, they say, right, you've won. Is that how it works?
No, so in tournaments, you can either win by submission or you can win by points.
Right.
So each position has points attached to it. So a takedown will score two. Passing the guard, which means, let's say, if someone's on their back and their legs are in front of you, you've got to get around their legs to score, so you'll score three. There's a knee on belly, which is obviously knee on belly, that scores two, and a mount scores four, and a back control equals four. Yeah. 4 points again.
But if it's not points, it's just basically a yield wins it.
So there's some competition now, there's a real big submission only scene where there's no points involved, and again, it may just be one 10-minute round. Sometimes they'll have a judge's decision attached to it, or sometimes it's just classed as a draw if there's no submission.
It must be psychologically very hard, though, if you're under the cosh and thinking, no, I don't want to submit. You know, that's building your resilience, isn't it?
But I enjoy my limbs, and I like breathing as well. Yeah. So.
I mean, it's the ultimate form of self-defence, isn't it, these kinds of things? You know, if anyone comes at you in any fashion, you can deal with that by becoming an expert at these things as well. But I watched a guy, Eastern European guy, doing some grappling. I can't remember his name now because it was a couple of weeks ago. And he basically got into a position where he was on top, and every attempt that the other guy tried to get away from that, this guy just dealt with.
Yeah.
And I just thought the balance, the mental kind of composure, I was just like quite gobsmacked by it. But it's like most things, you look at things superficially. When you actually watch carefully, you realise like the
intricacies.
Yeah.
People think it's just, oh, two fellas roll around on the floor, yeah, and they go, I'd just stand up if that was me.
Yeah.
No, it's not happening.
Yeah. Well, one of the guys was trying to do that and get out of it, and this other guy just did not allow this guy to get out of that position for like about 4 or 5 minutes. Just like, that's incredible, really, you know, the combat. But you can see the guy underneath was tiring as he was thinking of ideas and he weren't working. You know, there's a mental aspect to it too. But I mean, it was fascinating, and I would recommend people to watch BJJ and grappling online and just see what you think of it. Even if you're not thinking about taking it up, have a look, because it's a whole new world, isn't it?
You've got to think. I think you've got to be quite intelligent. Most of the top grapplers in the world, they're all very intelligent people, because you've got to think under pressure, when obviously then someone may be sitting on your chest and you're fatiguing, and obviously the gravity's working against you, and you've still got to mentally compose yourself to try and escape and then try and win as well.
Yeah. Fascinating. But I was really interested in it, and I know I've heard quite a few people say about it, you know, in terms of self-defence, but also personal development, mental discipline, and also the physical aspects to it all as well. So where's your gym then? You've got a mat space and a gym, haven't you? So where have you set up the gym that you've got now?
So we're in Skelmersdale. It's a place called Pimbo Industrial Estate.
Yeah.
We're in one of the garage units there in Peel House. So we've got quite a big mat space, and attached to it, in the rest of the unit, we've got a strength and conditioning area. So we've got squat rack, we've got cables, we've got punch bags, we've got free weights, dumbbells, slam balls, tyres, mace. So it's a full area now that we have three full-time PTs working out of the gym now as well.
Cool. So people can drop in and do gym there, work with PTs if they want, but also do the classes as well. Is it that kind of...
So it's more of a closed members gym now. You can't just walk in.
Obviously. Oh, yeah.
So. But obviously the guys, obviously if they're having a PT, obviously the PTs bring their clients and obviously they use it.
Yeah.
But it is for the members only, that it's only them that can use it.
Yeah, cool. So Skelmersdale again, it's a new town, just, I think it's northeast of Liverpool, isn't it?
About 6 miles, seven miles away from Liverpool.
Yeah, it's quite well positioned actually, in terms of there's quite a few places around that aren't far from Skelmersdale.
There's great motorway access, there's the M6 and then there's the 58 literally wrapping around it.
Yeah. It's quite a nice drive into Skelmersdale as well. You know, it's like a new town, there's loads of roundabouts and stuff, but
still I actually like jams ever.
Yeah, that's it, but I like cutting through, and I think it's a nice space. So January 2020, you were involved in this gym at that point, weren't you? And then, of course, COVID came along. What happened then? How did you deal with that situation?
To be honest, it was just the world came crashing down. It wasn't good. We'd been open for 3 months. We were slowly picking people up. We had a good member base already. I think there was maybe 20, 25 members at that point. And then, obviously, the world shut down. But luckily, near enough everyone carried on paying their membership. So we weren't sort of relying too much on income, because we were only subletting a space. So there was another, we were just renting like a, we are where we, sorry, we're currently in the space where we were. So again, we were subletting off a guy who had the lease, and we were just in his gym helping him pay the rent to his lease as well. So luckily we weren't too reliant on memberships, but thankfully everyone near enough carried on paying. But in terms of dealing with lockdown, wasn't great, because like sort of all my work stopped, and then you sort of like attached to your work, it's like purpose, isn't it? Obviously there was no teaching for me, there was no DJing, there was no grappling, and again all my social life sort of went. So it wasn't good for the first couple of months.
Yeah, no, it was a tough time. I got paid throughout it, and my partner Phoebe was on maternity leave, and we were quite lucky. But then her maternity leave ended still during lockdown, and then she wasn't entitled to like maternity pay.
Yeah,
it was only statutory. So we went a few months without that income, and there's so many permutations that affect so many different people in so many different ways. You know, it's very difficult. But you do a bit of DJing as well. You're still doing that on?
Yeah, still doing that. I maybe now do 2-3 gigs a month max. Yeah. That's it. I don't like staying up too late no more.
Yeah.
So I've got a residency in a place called the Mustard Club in Ormskirk, and they've also got a bar in Chester as well. So a flair between the two of them.
Well, that's good.
So I've done that since I was 18.
Yeah. We'll put details of the gym and
yeah,
your DJing as well on the notes afterwards. But, you know, it's good to be involved in a few different things, isn't it? So that loyalty from the clients, because you're offering something special, I mean, there's things I'm in that, and like things I subscribe to, and because I like those institutions or that service, when you're attached to something, you don't resent like paying for it. Yeah. You know, if you're not necessarily using it because, you know, well, it's COVID and I'm still loyal to that kind of thing. I think that's an important part of it as well. But when you got through that first lockdown, how did the second one impact on you in early 2021? Because in late 2020, something happened in terms of the lease, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So the guy whose gym it was at the time, Vaughan, who had the lease, he decided to change premises. Like his partner had a hairdresser's the other side of town, and they had a room or a floor space that again became available, and he thought, you know what, I'm gonna downsize and put him and his partner's business all in one space. It made sense for them just to have one unit between them. So then the opportunity then to take on the whole unit ourselves was there, and again, this is what we probably always wanted, because if we were going to stay in the unit where we were, we were thinking at some point we're going to have to move, because we're going to get too big, because we just want our own. We want to be able to do what we want to do without sort of asking, oh, is this okay, is that okay? So then he went, I'm leaving, do you want to take the lease on? So we spoke to the building manager and it was all fine, and my business partner John, he was a bit hesitant at first. He went, oh, there's going to be another lockdown, we just know there is, like, we both knew it. But I went, it's fine, we will then be entitled to every single grant that's going to come our way, because obviously I'd researched it. What was it? I asked Vaughan what he got, I asked the building manager what we'd get, so it was fine. I just went, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
Again, sometimes you can think of a million reasons not to do something, can't you? If you focus on those kinds of worries, and again, it's good to have that little bit of anxiety and to say, right there, we're doing the right thing, let's ask the questions. But you know, you had that foresight to get through it. So inevitably, probably a few weeks later, the second big lockdown in. There'd been another minor one in between the first and the second, and you did get government support to help you through that time.
It was a big blessing in disguise, really, that all that government support and lockdowns, really, because with all the money, we just kitted out the place again. We decorated it all, we put all our brand new equipment in, so it was a real big blessing in disguise, COVID, really, for us. I know some businesses obviously went by the wayside, but it benefited us, because without the lockdown money, we'd probably still just be chipping away now, improving the unit now slowly. But literally from, I think from Feb onwards, we'd kitted it out with that first load of money. We just done it all in one go.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, you know, during that crisis, I mean, that's a huge positive. You've got jobs created.
Yeah.
You've got a service created that offers something different for people. And, you know, Skelmersdale as well, it's often thought of as quite a deprived new town, etc. You're doing it in a part of the community where you can say, you know, let's make a difference. And I'm going to be speaking to a yoga tutor who's opened a studio in Bootle shortly as well, and I just think it's great to have that service on the doorstep in deprived areas, and also anyone can access it.
Yeah.
And it's a great place to get to, Skelm, isn't it? You know,
very,
as you said, traffic's easy, etc., etc. That's brilliant. And obviously, you've had a few ups and downs. Now you've got a fully kitted gym, you've got your own place. But, you know, again, people might watch what grappling is and BJJ. We've alluded to some of this before. But what do you think martial arts offers people in terms of the whole package, particularly what you might offer? What are the kind of things that people might get from it?
I've found with our place, it's just the sense of community, yeah. I think, because we've got such a diverse group of people in there. There's literally got prison officers, bodyguards, farmers, students, and again, they're all mingling together. Yeah. And a lot of them, it's just their way of escaping the world for a couple of hours. It's like, yeah. A lot of them, it's a bit cliche to say, it's their happy place. I know, like, yeah. Obviously the house is their happy place, but, or it's like, you ever seen, do you remember Cheers?
Yeah.
It's like the place where everyone knows your name. It's, yeah. It's that little like community there where everyone just comes and everyone's just dead happy.
Yeah.
And again, it's a lot of people come to us for different reasons. Some of them enjoy the discipline side of it. Some enjoy the health and fitness side of it.
Yeah.
Some people like just to come have a scrap. It's just in some people just to come have a scrap, like legalised fight club,
yeah.
Just to let a load of energy out. And again, just building people up as well. So we've got a load of, one of the big goals for the gym was, or like a mission, was to get the younger people from SKEM involved.
Mm.
And we've got now, I think, 6-7 lads from the town that are all under 18.
Yeah.
And we've got two of them now that are our assistant junior coaches. So we're developing them as a little coach as well. Even if they may not have a goal to go into coaching full time or later on, we're just developing their communication skills, their confidence skills. So again, I think the other week we took on our second one, so he doesn't pay for his membership no more. Yeah. He helps us twice a week and he has full access to the place. So like next week, he's got to lead the warm up in the junior class. Again, it's just developing his confidence.
Mm. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
But I always think it's great, you know, like, anything that gets set up anyway, when you kind of tap into the immediate, people come from around, but when you tap into the immediate environment and also working with young people, the benefits of that further down, not just what they're getting now, is incredible. For them to be leading the section, that's also good. I'm just going to throw this out there, but you know, that you can get a lot of funding to support underprivileged people doing things like this. And you know, I'm setting up a CIC at the moment to do with, like, helping underprivileged groups. It'd be great to look at options with your gym about
definitely
getting funding.
I don't know where to look for it, or I've tried just googling like funding, but I don't know where to find
access. Yeah. Well, I'm doing something at the minute which I might be able to help you with moving forward, but that's good investment in people, in social capital, isn't it? You know, I can think of a lot of people, and I'm not just thinking about like underprivileged and like the lads who can't be bothered with school. You know, it's a little bit of a label, that, isn't it? But
yeah.
To get people who maybe can't find what they're into and say, is this something that you like? Again, it might not be for everyone, but to open people's eyes to things. I mean, I started meditating during lockdown 2.5 years ago, and I'm doing it every day now, and it took that COVID to get me to do it with discipline. And if I think of some of the opportunities I've had through life where something just happens or a door opens, if you give someone a door to something, and then that can have a big impact on their life, you know, I think that's fantastic. So
just be around like good role models, right? I think especially for the young lads in the gym that we've got, because some people may think of where they're from, they're literally surrounded by, I was like classed as a gang of highly functional individuals, because like a lot of them have got their own businesses, so they're surrounded by just positive, especially male role models. There's a lot of positive male role models in our space. Again, we have like Sean, the young lad, he's like 16 and he's mingling with Farmer Pete, who's a 66 year old farmer, and he's hanging around with him, he's learning off him, he's listening to him, he's just learning his life experiences. He's just in this great environment. So that's like the big goal, to create that big and like great environment for people.
Brilliant. Now, you also offer a few other things at your place as well. So you've gone into things like hypnosis and mind coaching. Now, I've spoken to a couple of people in the past who've done hypnosis, and I've spoken to people who offer counselling and coaching services. I'm going to offer more, but what do you offer then at your place? How do those two things work?
So I offer mind coaching and hypnosis sessions.
Yes.
I've recently been getting into it now, been doing that for about 6 months now, 6 to 8 months now. But it all stemmed from martial arts again, my own experiences. I was finding when I was competing in Thai boxing, felt like I wasn't pulling the trigger in fights.
Yeah.
I was like one of the better guys in the gym. I was like, we had a good stable of fighters at that time. We were all doing well. I classed myself as being a big part of their success as well, helping them with training, etc. But I just couldn't pull the trigger during fights. Yeah. And I thought, something wrong here. And it was again just an older guy, one of my teammates, he went, I thought about mind coach. I was like, what's that? This was 9 years ago, so I didn't have a clue.
Yeah.
But I knew who the said man coach was because he dealt with a lot of sort of well-known fighters at the time. He still does. And he went, why don't you book him? Go see Vinny. This is Vinny Shorman, who have ended up, again, learning loads from. So he's now one of my teachers now. And I did, what did he call it? It's 4 weeks to freedom program. And we found out basically what was holding me back. And it was focusing on what I didn't want. Because I think session one, he went, okay, so what do you want from this? I think I said, right, I don't want to not hold back in fights. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. He went, okay, you've told me what you don't want. Tell me what you want. I was like, whoa. And that was like a big eye opener for me, that. And then I'd always been interested in what Vinny did, but I didn't have sort of time to commit to it because obviously I was in uni, but we'll touch on that later. And then the chance came during lockdown. I always thought if I wanted to get into mind coaching, I wanted to do it from Vinny or his teacher, Colin Mackay. So they did, I think it was like a 4 or 5 day online one. This was during lockdown. So that was a big sort of way to get into it. But I found the online learning environment probably wasn't the best for me. Yeah. I like, obviously, I can ask questions quicker. You can sort of like butt in, so to speak, a bit quicker, can't you? Compared to maybe a 15-person Zoom meeting. So about 4 months ago, Vinny Shorman, he did his first training weekend for hypnotists, and I was straight on it, straight away. So I'm now one of the Shorman Solutions certified hypnotherapists now.
Yeah, and hypnosis as well. I've addressed this in a previous podcast, but people think it's about like getting people to do stupid things.
Look into my eyes, around the eyes, yeah.
You're under. Whereas it's basically about accessing deep relaxation.
Yeah.
And then once you're in a deep relaxation state, then looking at things that maybe affect you. Is that kind of how it works?
Yeah. So obviously hypnosis is just getting someone really super relaxed, and then you can then start the positive suggestions to like the subconscious mind will probably take it on board even more once you're relaxed, compared to if you're in like a state of panic. You're not going to take on any positive suggestions, are you? So again, it's just really relaxing. So I'm building, maybe, so in my sessions we'll spend maybe 5-10 minutes just chatting, so I'll be able to like build a good rapport with them, and then we can start to get into the relaxation stuff.
Good stuff. And in terms of the mind coaching, does that work slightly differently? Is that about examining the positive thoughts rather than the negative thoughts?
So again, it's going back to what they want, really. So what they want. And again, we'll use NLP techniques, so neuro-linguistic programming techniques. So that's what the stuff that I'll use.
Yeah, I'm going to get an NLP expert on soon, and I've spoken to a few people who've used NLP. But NLP, basically, if you look at people as having different sub-personalities, we have this kind of chattering monkey brain, don't we, which helps us in terms of evolution, but doesn't always help us in terms of our day-to-day living, who's constantly negative. And
well, it's there to keep you alive,
isn't it? It is, it's there to keep you alive, but you can't let it dominate your life. Neuro-linguistic programming basically says, how do you talk to yourself? How do you think? How is that impacting the way you behave? And then you can think about changing those things. But I found that since I had a bit of a mental health crisis in 2007, I've gone into all that kind of stuff and researched it. And again, some people say, oh yeah, people think, oh yeah, you do that and then you're healed. No, we never get to the ultimate end as human beings, but they can help us on our journey to get better. And I would encourage everyone to check out mind coaching, hypnosis. Might not be for you. I've done a hypnosis session. I've done plenty of coaching and I've found them useful. Sometimes it might be the person that you're working with and the way you are at that time, but I would recommend people getting interested in that. There's still a little bit of a taboo, isn't it, about discussing things that maybe we find difficult. And I see it particularly in the older generation where we don't talk about things like that. And I think it's better now. Like, you go into schools now, they talk about mental health all the time in schools. When I went to school, if you had mental health problems, you were a weirdo, or you were locked up. And I think it's good to have this out in the open and to be offering these things.
Don't talk about your feelings. We're British.
Yeah, we're British.
Keep it locked up. Yeah.
Keep it locked up. But so do you offer hypnosis and mind coaching through the gym, or is there a website? Or
You can contact me on Instagram. Yeah. We can do it that way.
Yeah.
But I do offer face-to-face, and I do offer ones over Zoom or FaceTime, etc. As well. Yeah. It works exactly the same.
Yeah.
I think I prefer the face-to-face ones, but I know obviously some people's schedules, they can't get to me, or sometimes the gym, like, there may be PTs going on, so it's not ideal. So most of my ones are done online.
And again, it's down to the person, isn't it? Because some people might think, well, I don't really want to speak to someone. And I know that some online counselling say, you know, we do it online. If you don't like that counsellor, you want to leave at any point, you can just do it and we'll rearrange. So it's about finding out what works for people, doesn't it, depending on their situation. We met through teaching, and I've spoken to a lot of people before. Steve Reed, who's been on before. I'm getting a couple of people on who've changed careers recently, a bit like yourself. You're making a transition from teaching to full-time coaching and the other services you provide. And there are probably a lot of people listening to this, and probably myself 10 years ago would think, oh, that sounds like a big change, you know, I want to follow my dreams, but it's difficult, and what if this doesn't work, and what if that doesn't work? And what kind of advice would you offer for people looking to make a change in career or their life's purpose, if you know what I mean?
Like I said, I've had all them thoughts. Like,
yeah.
I wanted to touch on it. Them thoughts are there, like we said, to keep you alive, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like, whatever, like, going back to when I thought, should I open the gym or not? Because your brain's there telling you, oh yeah, don't do it in case you fail. And if you don't fail, if you fail, you'll feel these bad feelings. So if you don't do it, you'll be okay.
Yeah.
I'd say, obviously, make sure you've got a plan.
Yeah.
I'm doing this slowly because the gym at the minute, there's a good full-time wage for one person there because there's two of us, we split it. So I can't go full-time as such with the gym just yet. How long did you work for? 2 years. So like, my goal has always been the gym will be my full-time job.
Yeah.
But I'm only now at a point where I can drop a day teaching. So like, I'm lucky that I only work, that I work on supply agency. So I can pick and choose my days. But again, I'm starting off with one day and then I'm going to develop it from there. So again, I've thought about this for it. It's been in my mind. I've pictured myself being a full-time coach, pictured myself doing the things that I want to do. But it's not a fast thing. I've realised this, it can't just be done overnight,
because
obviously I've got a mortgage to pay, I like going travelling, there's a certain way that I like to live, and I need money. So, and the jiu-jitsu gym can't provide that for me, so I'm starting off with one day. And again, I'd recommend to anyone, do it.
Yeah.
Again, it may take a while, it may take 6 months, it may take a year, but do it. Always have that plan and picture yourself doing what you want to do. Yeah. And it will come to fruition. It's coming to fruition. Can't even speak. Fruition now for me. It's coming now. It took 2 years to get to this point, but I'm now doing it.
Yeah. I think it's important, isn't it? You know, you sometimes get like watch a video or listen to an inspirational speaker talking about like making that change, etc. But the first change is the directional change, and as you say,
it's that initial thought.
Yeah, you visualize yourself being successful. And then you say, right, what do I need to do?
Yep.
Be prepared for setbacks and come up with a plan that's realistic. So it's like a smart target, isn't it? Like, I'm not expecting this to happen overnight. It may take a few years and see how
the smart targets are brilliant. Break the goal down into little tiny little tiny goals, and then you can progress to the next one. I think some people, I think I was listening to something Jordan Peterson said, people have the goal, and he said, aim a little lower.
Yeah.
So if that means that's a little target, then isn't it? That's like, you may have the initial goal, which is maybe 10 steps ahead, but what's step one? Mm-hmm. That's your first little win to doing that.
I think that mindset change towards making little steps towards things, even if it's exploratory. Things might work against you, and you think, well, I must admit, I'm setting up my CIC, my community interest company at the moment, and over the last 3 weeks since I've wrote the bid, I've had all that negative stuff, this isn't going to work, you're not good at that, coming into my mind.
You just stay nice and safe here, keep doing what you're doing,
keep doing what you're doing, this is what you know, don't go outside the cave, there's tigers out there, or whatever. And
the mind, like, some people don't realise that that internal chatter, it all has a positive intent.
Yeah.
You may not realise it, but then once you realise that's your brain, it all has a positive intent.
And it gets you to think about what you're doing and to set that specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and time limited smart targets. And smart targets, people can Google that. And the other day, I'm off at the minute for 6 weeks. The other day, all summer I've been planning on like updating my targets, and the other 2 days ago I went on the computer and I wrote all my targets down and thought about the little things. And I actually reviewed one I wrote 4 months ago and I go, I've done that. And you lose sight, don't you, of the bigger picture, but making those little changes. Before 2007, I think I would have listened to that negative voice all the time.
Yeah.
Do what you do, you know. And since, you know, I had that little bit of a crisis, I've kind of come out the other side, and now I'm like, right, it doesn't mean I'm not negative sometimes and I'm not over cautious and I don't get anxious. And again, there's positives to that. But you've got to say, right, that's good, and this is something that I'm into, this is something I'm passionate about. And I need to, and it might just be, for some people, I've used this example before, for some people who like want to change their health, it might be having one apple the next day, and then the day after that having another apple, because they don't eat any fruit or veg. That might be your target. And you do that, and it's that small target. It might be for some people going to a martial arts class, and you might not like it, okay, or don't like it. They might go and go, this is something I'm into, you know, this is something I can get something out of. So, you know, everyone's different, aren't they? And that first step, coming up with a plan and being positive, it doesn't mean you're stupid and you're careless. It just means that you see the positives in things. Because we all know, think about the positive people in your life. Do you want to be with them? Yeah.
Yeah.
Think about those negative people. Do you want to be with them? No.
No.
You know, which isn't to say I have people who say, oh, wait there, have you thought about this and that? I'm grateful for that. But you've got to be careful where you get your info.
But I find, you know, going back to like certain teachers, all they do is moan about their job. Well, I think, why don't you leave that? Do something else. Be happy.
Yeah.
Oh, just being happy. The amount of like little jobs or little like contracts or gigs that I've had, I've like obviously taught in loads of gyms over the years. And there's been points, or like, and then I've had residencies in certain bars with others. I'm not enjoying it no more.
Yeah.
That's it, I'm done, I'm good. And then literally another opportunity is there.
Yeah.
It's weird. Like, once you can grasp that, let's say if I'd have stuck in all these, working, doing these classes or working in these bars, I'd still be there, just really unhappy.
Yeah.
And then nothing else that I've got now would have came about.
Yeah. And again, sometimes when those opportunities come, I mean, I had a great opportunity. I'm going to speak to people about this at a later date, but I had a great opportunity come up to me about like 9 to 10 weeks ago in terms of my career and stuff, and I thought, wow, where did this come from? This is the kind of thing that I'm into. But it's important to see those things and to take them. And again, you know, people are getting older and you think, oh, I've always done this. I think the older you get, the harder it can be to change to an extent. But I think you can be changing, you know, your last day on earth, you can be making changes to your experience, can't you? And it is hard, that negative mind. It's very powerful. And, you know, that's why we're here now, because we didn't roam around, you know, saying, oh, maybe we can try this food instead of that good food that keeps me alive back here and all that stuff in nature. So
change is good.
Change is good. It is.
Variety is good. That's why I do, like, the amount of, like, little jobs that I do. People like, say, like, oh, what do you do for a living? I go, well, this, and this. I reel off about 4 or 5 different things, because there's lots of things out there to explore and experience. And you find a lot of people will have that same job for years, or they'll stay in the same school because it's safe.
Yeah.
They won't like venture out.
Yeah.
There's a big world. There's a lot of things that I want to experience.
Yeah.
I think a lot of things that I want to learn as well. Yeah. That's why I'm constantly doing other things. It's not because I'm unstable or I get itchy feet. Like, why not try that?
Yeah. I think that's brilliant. I couldn't agree more. But one of the things I've had a few people who've like left teaching and that, and that's because I know a lot of teachers. But teaching is a great job, and like, I love being in the classroom. I love the interaction with students. It's a tough job. And I think that, you know, I'm 45 now. I think when I was 25, my view on teaching now is a little bit different. But you've got to look for opportunities, and not just, I always use the story of Plato in the cave, where if people are born looking at shadows on the wall at the back of the cave all their life, and then someone says, look over your shoulder, there's the real world out there. See those people?
Yeah.
They're the real people. You're just looking at the shadows. Plato said, 2,500 years ago, or whatever, most people would just go back into the cave and keep looking at the shadows because that's what they know. And you've got to be aware. I often use that to myself and to other people. You know, think about what Plato's cave, the story of Plato's cave says. There's things going on that you don't know about.
Yeah.
And go and check them out.
Yeah, go experience it.
Now, you made a big change when you were 28, 29 in terms of doing a university degree. And obviously, I think they say education's wasted on the young, don't they? When you're young, you don't always appreciate things. Like, I look back now and go, oh, I wish I'd have learned the language when I was a kid and learned an instrument and all that. So, how hard was it, for you at 28, 29 to make that decision to do a degree and to carry through?
It's something that I'd always wanted to do. I always wanted to go to uni, but I didn't do particularly great at my GCSEs.
Yeah.
And then that's just then grilled into it. Oh, if you don't get your GCSEs, you can't go to uni, you can't do anything. I think your life's over.
Yeah.
I think with some teachers. And then what did I do? I was working just in gyms. I was lifeguard. But luckily, there was another lad that I was working on poolside with, and me and him were very similar. And we'd always spoke about wanting to not work on poolside. Obviously, working as a lifeguard's brilliant, but obviously it's not something that I didn't want to do for the rest of my life. And again, he always said, how can we get into uni? I always want to do it. So the pair of us made a little pact to then research how to get into university as a mature student and how we went about it. There was options there for access courses. There was options to all go straight in. Luckily, I didn't have to do an access course.
Yeah.
One of the options was, because we both said, yeah, like, find out the course leader. So I emailed the course leader at Edgehill. Said, look, mature students, I want to do the PE in sport degree. These are my qualifications. I've got no A-levels. I've got no maths or English GCSE. One of my options, but I've been coaching with kids for years, doing sport, coaching for years, and then come in and we'll have a chat. And the outcome of that chat was, he said, you could do an access course if you want, but you could start this September if you want. I went, go on, how? He went, do me an assignment, and if it's up to first year standard, you're in. It's like, boy, yes. Instead of like then having to wait a year, because I think I'd been into the university as well, and I'd spoke to some people in, I don't know what department it is, like getting into university. They said, oh yeah, you'll have to do a year. I thought, oh, there's got to be a better way. So obviously then done the assignment and passed it, and there I was. I'd started, I was in, and then what did I do? Quit my job, and then we went travelling for 5 months, and then started uni.
Yeah.
It, like I said, it was always something that I wanted to do, but I just, again, that thing, that negative mind, was just, it just took over. Oh, you haven't got your A-levels, you haven't got your maths and English, you can't do it, you'll never get into university, you'll just be doing this and this. But again, I think having that positive, that other person who wanted to develop himself, really spurred me on. Again, just from a conversation, just stood at poolside while we're meant to be watching people swim, probably someone could have drowned that day. But me and him were conspiring how to get off the pool. And again, I think he ended up doing an access course, but he did it in 6 months of a night, and we both started uni in the sit. He went down to London, I went to Edgehill.
Yeah. I think that accountability partner idea, though, it's strong, isn't it? When
yeah,
you say,
yeah,
like, let's do this. And I had a colleague once, a few, probably last year in school, and we were both having issues with like a few students in our classes. And one day I said, right, what's the problem? And she told me, and I wrote it down. I said, right, what do you think you need to do? And I wrote it down. She went, oh. Right, and she said, what's the problem with your class? So I told her, and she said, what do you think you need to do? We wrote it down. And all of a sudden, we both supported each other to get a plan. Instead of like the negative thinking, we said, yeah.
And just keep it to yourself.
And then over the next few weeks, you're saying, how's it going with that person? You know what I mean? But that's a very small scale example. But that accountability partner, where you go, right, let's do this. But the other thing I meant from you, Kev, is that initiative. Like, you emailed the guy.
Yeah.
You said, right, I'm going to email him now. And that, like, kind of, you know, when you meet people who go,
go straight to the source.
Yeah,
that's the worst that can happen.
I was talking to someone once about something, just about helping them with something, and I remember it. Anyway, she just went, well, right, she was on the blower straight away, and I just thought, you're one of them people who just gets things done
yeah, yeah.
that need to be done. You know, I always say to people, if you're playing tennis, serve the ball to your opponent. If they don't reply or they can't get it back over the net, I don't mean it necessarily a competitive thing, but you know, like if something needs to be done, make sure you're not the reason why it's not getting done. Do you know what I mean? I just think that that's so fundamental. But I think the initiative you showed and the accountability part of thing there, you know, kind of got you going with. Do you think that helped you with a lot of the changes that came later because you'd done that?
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
And then when I was in uni, again, I had an accountability partner. There was a guy, he was a little bit older than me on the course. He was, how old was I? I was 28 or 29, and he was about 35, 36. And me and him formed like this little team. Yeah. And again, we helped each other, we got each other through the course. Because you had that someone to bounce ideas off, swap resources with, swap references, all that university kind of stuff to bounce off with.
Yeah, that's important as well, because when you're in the thick of it, you're stressed, you just don't think clearly, do you? Yeah. as much as you do. What we'll do is we'll put your Instagram in the notes as well about the coaching, the hypnosis. We'll put the gym details down, we'll put links to your DJ Mustard, is it, in Ormskirk?
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out.
And any private parties that want to be booked in. Weddings, christenings, bar mitzvahs.
What was the name of the guy who did that 4 weeks to freedom?
Vinny Shorman is my teacher.
Yeah, I mean, people might, you know, want to Google some of those people that you mentioned as well. And I think the message of this is, regardless of where you are in life, you've got choices. You don't always appreciate it. It might seem hard, but those first steps are just so important. Now, are you still interested in doing a relaxation technique?
Yeah,
or do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, I've got one.
Cool.
A really easy one. In fact, you can be the guy that does it.
Okay, well, before we do
that, I'll do it on you in a sec.
Cool. Before we do that relaxation technique, just want to say thanks to Kev for his inspiring talk. I've actually been in a funny mood this morning. I'm buzzing now after that talk, so you cheered me up, Kev. But this is about people taking responsibility, taking the initiative, coming up with a plan, having accountability partners, and looking for those opportunities that come your way. And you know, often things are hidden in plain sight, aren't they, and you don't always see them. But Kev, I think you've really grasped the bull by the horns and made big, big changes in your life and made up over the coaching, and I wish you every success.
Thank you.
In the future. So tell us about this relaxation technique.
Okay, this particular technique, I learned it from Vinny. This was actually the first thing that me and him did on his 4 weeks of freedom. So I'm in his office, and you're right, before we do anything, we're going to do our first technique. It's called Hahala. A lot of people may know, I don't even know what the word means, but that's just the name of the technique. So this technique is about calming your mind, calming your nervous system, and opening up your peripheral vision. Because if found whenever, let's say, people go, oh, it's that tunnel vision, or couldn't think, whatever, a lot of your peripheral vision closes, and then you just, so you can't then, so what you touched on then, open up your eyes, open up your vision. So, do you want to do this one?
Go on,
Tim. Okay, Tim, so put your stuff down and stand up for me. So, anyone can do this technique, okay? So, what I want you to do, Tim, is just relax yourself, feet shoulder width apart, and look above your eye line for me, please, Tim. I want you to focus on a spot on the wall that's just above your eye line. Can you find that spot for me?
Yep.
Just look directly at that spot. That's all I want you to do. Just relax your shoulders and just relax your breathing. And just focus on that one spot above you. Okay, that's all I want you to do. And just nice, steady breathing. Keep your eyes focused on that one spot. So you can do this one as well. You can change your breathing patterns as well. Some people like to just do normal, steady breathing. Or you can do a nice, slow breath in and a nice, slow breath out. So do a four in, four out breath for me, please, Tim. Still focusing on that one spot, okay? Good. Keep going. So what Tim's doing now, he's breathing in for four and he's exhaling for four, and he's still focusing on that one spot. So change your breathing slight now for me, please, Tim. Go eight in and eight out now for me, still keeping your eyes on that one spot above your eye line, everyone, if you're going to do this at home. Good. Keep going. That's right, more of that. Now just go back to a normal breathing rate now, Tim. I want you to imagine now, Tim, that you can see all the way to the left and you can see all the way to the right. So again, what we're doing now, everyone, we're using our imagination. So we're imagining now that we can see all the way to the left and we can see all the way to the right. Good, well done. Still keeping your eyes focused on that one spot above, normal breathing pattern, and imagining that you can see all the way to the left. And again, we're using our imagination again now.
I want you to imagine now for me, Tim, that you can see all the way to the ceiling and you can see all the way to the floor. Again, still focusing on that one spot above your eye line, that you can imagine seeing everything above you and everything below. Good, more of that, that's right. I want you to imagine now, Tim, that you can see all the way to the left, all the way to the right, all the way above you, all the way down below. So your eyes are fully open. We can see everything clearly around you. You can see everything. You've got full peripheral vision. Relax, Tim. Relax, good.
Cool.
Okay, nice little trance then. That was good.
I was loving it.
How'd you feel? Feel relaxed, feel calm?
Yeah. The posture, the standing posture was very neutral. I looked at the spot. And then, because you're saying to me, do this breathing, you're completely focused on the breathing and like the all the chatter stuff. And then instead of looking at that one spot, I kind of just felt like I was watching a whole field of vision.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. That's what you want. Because let's say you've got blinkers on, you probably don't think so, you can't see what's going on. But then like if you see the blinkers get opened, you can see everything. So I use that a lot, particularly before I compete, and a lot of fighters use this as well, so they can see everything clearly. Again, they can see everything above, everything below, and everything to the left and to the right. That's especially important in combat sports, because you can then see, your subconscious will then see all the little micro movements that your opponent's doing.
Yeah.
But you can use this in any day to day life.
Yeah, it's a technique. It's interesting, that gorilla thing. Have you seen the thing where people are throwing a ball around and a fella dressed as a gorilla walks across the screen?
No.
And 50% of the people watching, you have to count how many times the ball gets thrown. 50% of the people watching don't see the gorilla.
Right.
And I heard another one that in a shop, now this might have been in like somewhere like New York where there's like just a square, you know, and everything's behind, like whatever. But apparently, if you go into a shop and get something and the person in front of you ducks below the desk in front, that 50 to 60% of people won't notice if another person comes up. And like, I think it's RRAD or whatever is what in our mind what we choose to focus on. And it just goes to show how limited. I mean, it's useful because this again, evolution. What's that over there? Is that a something trying to kill me or whatever? But you miss these details, don't you? And the mind, it's funny how it works and how it misses like these key things. Getting in the zone, I think what that activity does there is it encourages you to get in the zone, the present moment, like experience your body, your breathing, your awareness.
Because if you're in the present, you're not going to get anxious then if you're in the present moment. Because your anxiety is the fear of the future, isn't it?
Yeah. I was listening to a good meditation the other day by an Australian, a Buddhist nun or whatever, but it was a 20-minute meditation, and every now and again she said, that voice in your head now, she said, just ignore it. And I was like, wow. I listened to it when I was walking around, and I was like thinking, no, I'm not thinking about that now. No. It's just so empowering, isn't it, to just get into the present moment where we live our lives. I think that's fascinating. But I really enjoyed that, Kev. That was boss. I enjoyed it.
Good, thank you.
Brilliant. Anything else you want to mention before we finish?
No, I think. Oh, a little disclaimer, don't do hackle while you're driving, or if you're listening to this podcast while you're driving, maybe like fast forward, it'll stop. Okay.
That's good advice. So, Kev, thanks again. Very inspirational. Cheered me up no end today. Bit down this morning. And all the advice that you've given there is just fantastic life advice. Very positive. Wish you the best of luck moving forward. Come back on again in the future.
Definitely.
Tell us how you do.
Definitely. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Again, you know the story, everyone. If you can follow me on Twitter, like and subscribe on Spotify, YouTube. If you can make a monthly contribution for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, makes a big difference to me. It means I can get people on and spend time researching and spread the word and get happy and try to live in the present moment today. We'll have people all over the world now kind of doing that meditation, looking up to the sky. So the revolution starts now. See you later, folks. Bye.